This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
We continue to be heard on terrestrial radio stations up and down the ACC footprint. And we will continue to take your phone calls at 844-SAY-ACCN. Mr. Durham, that was some kind of pitching performance last night. I hope you're doing well.
Woo! I am. Great to be with you, Pack, as always. Looking forward to a great show. And it was an unbelievable ball game. Boy, Sam Heifel and Jack Leiter delivered the goods, didn't they?
Both were just fantastic.
And Sam's going to be with us, what, 9:30 this morning? Is that right? Am I correct? The timing on that right?
That is correct. That is accurate.
Hey, by the way, reach up there on the shelf, the like there to your left. You've produced it before behind you. There's that A. Bring that A down. You know that A? Is that still up there? Or did you go move that to other places? You know the A, the yellow A that used to be around there? Do we still have that somewhere? Yeah, did you move that?
Yeah, I did. I moved it. I don't know where I put it. What do you need?
We got to find it before Sam comes on. Do you know why? Fighting Cougar. That's right.
You could have asked me a half an hour ago to get that for you. As I'm looking.
I know. I was going to do it. It's an intro.
Scavenger hunt. A Packer and Durham scavenger hunt. That A's in here somewhere. I don't know where I put it, though.
It's a good content idea, by the way. We need to think about that. Maybe put it on that plus deal. Anyway, the former Cougar from the peak of good living, Sam Heifel, delivered the goods last night for NC State as he helped shut down Vanderbilt. 1-0 the final. Jack Leiter, sensational, by the way.
He was great.
But what a tremendous ball game that we had last night in Omaha. And, of course, the Wolfpack goes to the critical 2-0 pack. We talked about it yesterday. You get to 2-0, things start happening, right?
25 of the last 30 College World Series winners started 2-0 in Omaha. Just saying, that 2-0 is a big deal. And, you know, Brian O'Connor was with us yesterday. You'll hear that, by the way, in case you missed it, later in the program as well. And he talked about the importance of winning game two. It just kind of sets up your staff. It gives you rest, the whole routine, while everybody else is – you know, battling for their lives. If Virginia can pull that off tonight against Mississippi State, the two unseeded teams left in this tournament, and you got the eight really tremendous clubs, but the two unseeds would be 2-0, and they'd both be from the ACC. So Virginia with a golden opportunity last night, but NC State and Vandy put on. If you love old school baseball, that's exactly what that was last night. Man, could anybody get a big hit? Yeah, NC State got the big hit, and that was the difference. But just trying to get a guy on base, that's how dominant the pitching was. And if you did, could you get him to second to put him in scoring position? And then could somebody, knock on wood, finally get it? It was old school baseball. And in this day and age of the home run and first to double figures, and ironically, how crazy was Omaha yesterday? The afternoon game, Stanford had 20 hits. They put a 14 spot on Arizona. And then you get the nightcap where just two great, I mean, not good, great pitching performances. NC State gets the key knock. It only took one zip, your final. But, man, it was some kind of baseball game.
Yeah, Sam Heifel, though, remember now, we're talking about a freshman, technically a guy who was on the roster in 20. Season cut short, came back, obviously. Rinse, wash, repeat. And now all of a sudden, here he is on the big stage in Omaha, and the right-hander who played very well a week ago in Fayetteville. Remember when we were talking about what NC State might have gleaned from Ruston and Fayetteville, Pack? And I think it kind of showed yesterday. I really do. I think the wins at Louisiana Tech and then certainly the Supers at Arkansas have proven to be fortuitous in some respect to the Wolfpack.
That would be true. They've also been a nightmare for the Southeastern Conference. Remember, now they beat Alabama, who had no business. By the way, I'll say it again. Said it 3 weeks ago. They had no business being in the tournament as opposed to Pittsburgh that was sitting at home. But NC State opened this whole deal by beating Alabama. We know what they did to Arkansas, taking 2 out of 3. Nobody else pulled that off all year. Now they beat Vanderbilt. And just look at the pitchers that they have knocked off, Wes, in their last three. I mean, Beck's out of sight from Stanford, no problem. Kevin Copps is the best pitcher in baseball. They beat him in the ninth inning, game three. And then, you know, last night, Leiter, who's just fantastic. I mean, that run right there that you're looking at, NC State's last three games, Copps, Beck, and Leiter, W. And look at the scores. Wow. Gave up two, gave up four, zip. I mean, NC State's balling, man. They're hot, and they know it. And right now, they got a couple days off while their bracket's going to be determined between the SAT Bowl, between Stanford and Vandy, to figure out who can try to handle the Wolfpack over the weekend. But you could not ask for a better start if you're an NC State fan. Could not. They are.
Well, you're right about that. And Jack Leiter, by the way, fantastic last night. 15 strikeouts in Omaha for the Commodores. And holy smokes, some kind of ball game. This was, if you like baseball, period, I don't care what level, this was about as good as it gets from that perspective, I think.
Well, I will tell you, the Mississippi State game against Texas and this game, for baseball purists, this is right down your alley. I mean, strikeouts, great pitching. Can anybody just get something going on? The answer is no. So you had a 2-1 game with the Mississippi State knocking off Texas the night before, and a one zipper yesterday. I mean, it just like you said, if you love baseball, old school baseball, that is exactly what you love to watch. And if you love, hey, let's go, let's bang it, first double digits. Omaha's provided that too. Like I said yesterday, Stanford had 20 hits. And I want to just give a shout out to the Pac-12 real quick, because I mentioned this yesterday on the show. I was openly rooting for 15 pitching changes, and I just about got my wish, Wes. The off-campus radio show, which will also be affected today with the Loser Leave Town match between Burnt Orange and Big Orange.
That's right.
I'm rooting for blowing out and first to 15, because that game yesterday pushed our radio show to start at 6 p.m. 6 p.m. Ooh. We had a 34-minute radio show yesterday. So I'm rooting for Big Orange and Burnt Orange today. So I don't want any of this 1-0 Tennessee can't score. I don't want any of that nonsense. I want Big Orange and Burnt Orange to just absolutely throw every pitcher you got and 15-14, boys. That's what we're rooting for this afternoon. I don't care who wins. Just go long. Just go long.
So just looking for softball, aren't you? Slow pitch softball?
I am.
Looking for slow pitch softball?
Underhanded slow pitch. I mean, really. Rock 'em, sock 'em. Score all day. And just let me know that we're going to start the radio show about 6:15. That'd be about right for me. Be perfect.
Mound visits. You want some mound visits?
I want like 17 instant replay reviews where we're not sure if the guy touched the plate. I want all that garbage. I want all of it today in the afternoon. Like I said, I don't care which shade of orange moves on, but I just want a long 4.5-hour game today. That's what we're rooting for.
All right. We told you yesterday, in the scheme of Omaha and the way double elimination works, if you can get to 2-0, it's a big deal. How big a deal is it? Well, it's a huge deal. When you look at the fact that 50 of the 73 national champions have won their first two games, 68%. 25 of the past 30 have won their first two games. So, as big as last night was for NC State, equally as big for Virginia tonight. And the Hoos get the Bulldogs of Mississippi State. And Brian O'Connor, you'll see, in case you missed it, coming up about 8:30, he'll hand the ball to Griff McGarry, who last time we saw him was in the Super Regionals when he struck out 10 in a win against Dallas Baptist.
Tonight's game will be great, too. I mean, you never know with baseball, right? Well, it's just much less college baseball. It has the potential of being another one of those grinders. Like, if you love the old school, given the fact that Mississippi State was swinging at everything and they couldn't hit anything against Texas, two was all they needed. They took care of business, and it's a great baseball school, great baseball fans. Stark Vegas, I got nothing but props for Mississippi State baseball. But Virginia is balling. And Virginia's had great, not good, great success against the SEC in Omaha. So, with that said, it really does set the stage for tonight. I expect it to be another grinder, Wes. And I say that, and we'll sit there and watch a 10-9 game. You just, again, you never know with baseball. But both these teams right. can grind, and they both know how to win. And you just love when you got a pressure game like this one tonight, because it really does set you up like we talked about. If you can get to 2-0, you really are in business in Omaha. And, boy, the ACC with a W tonight is sitting really, really pretty.
Yep. That's it's a huge move if you can make it happen. And we'll see if Griff McGarry can pull the magic again tonight against the Mississippi State team that beat Texas the other night in what was a pretty solid pitching game as well.
Fantastic.
Not as good as last night, but close.
I don't know what else to say. It's just I keep telling you, it's my favorite tournament that the NCAA conducts. You cannot backdoor your way into a title with this. You play really good teams. You see big-time talent. And if you love baseball, you're going to see the next stars. And if you don't think that you're watching that game last night, that there weren't dudes you're going to see in the major league level, you're crazy. It was great. I mean, it really was. It was one of those things that you kind of get a sense. I think even the crowd did too, Wes, that you knew that, hey, anybody that can get the hit was going to win the game. And while it was nice to see Jack Leiter's father, Al, who's a tremendous pitcher up there, you know, doing his dog and pony, man, I tell you what, though, the shot Tatum hit was a bomb. That thing almost landed in my house. That thing, for the fact that nobody could make contact, that thing was launched. How about the bat flip? Ooh.
Oh, yeah.
This was a bomb.
Yeah, it was. Look at this. Look at the bat flip.
Ooh. Whee!
I'll tell you what, there were balls that were not hit as far as the bat flip in that game last night. Just telling you.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
Tatum launched it, man. That thing was crushed. Crushed.
Yeah.
But this is the thing about NC State, Wes. It just seems like anybody in the lineup can make plays, right? I mean, that's been the beautiful thing about the pack in this tournament. And you know, if you're Elliott, you're just sitting back with a smile on your face going, hey, boys, let's just keep playing ball. Because they are hot. They are hot, and they know it.
Yeah.
They're walking it, man. NC State's doing the job. Getting the job done.
And they played great defense last night behind Heifel, too.
No doubt.
Devontae Brown's diving catch in right field last night late in the game.
Third base.
Evan Justice was tremendous in relief. By the way, thought the box got a little tight late, Pack.
Oh.
Thought the strike zone got a little tight late.
Listen, I hate complaining about refs. It's too easy. But, like, all of a sudden, the ninth inning got crazy. Like, man, wait a minute. Whoa.
Man.
What happened to the strike zone in the ninth inning? But, nevertheless, bottom line.
Hey, we got to hit the phone. Hey, pitcher, hit the phone. We're going to hit the phone, pitcher. Hit the phone right there.
But it didn't matter. NC State's just balling. Double play, catch you later. Who's next?
That's
State's
right.
State's rolling. NC State. How about that? Oh, Elliott Avent. Get the job.
Hey.
Love it.
Guess what? Yesterday, when we left this program, kids, at 10 a.m., we got 10:05 yesterday by the highest court in the land, kids.
Sure did.
You know, we've been 10:05 by schools. We've been 10:05 by conferences. We've been 10:05 by
coaches,
just individual things, right? Coaches, the whole bit. We got 10:05 yesterday. We went right to the top of the chart, didn't we?
Supreme Court.
We went 10:05 to the Supreme Court of the United States. The old highest court in the land got us yesterday, Pack.
They really didn't get us. They got this guy right here. As I said yesterday on Twitter, who says this guy can't put people together? He put the Supreme Court together. They rolled 9-0 against him yesterday. Wore him out.
Oh, my.
Woodshed.
Speaking of getting shut out, it just wasn't Vanderbilt. Emmert got blanked yesterday.
Yeah.
Back again. After this.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Durham on a Tuesday, 844-SAY-ACCN. Wes, you'd be proud to know I did find the A. Found the A during the break.
There it is.
So we'll put that to the side for Sam later in the program. By the way, our two-a-days also continue today. Clemson football and Miami football. We will concentrate on it. And Grace Rayner will join us coming up here in about 15 minutes to talk about the Tigers And look forward to have Manny Navarro on later on during the Power Hour to talk about the Canes. So there you go.
All right. The news of the day in college athletics, well, goes to the highest court. In a 9-0 decision yesterday, Justice Neil Gorsuch wrote the Supreme Court's opinion, which upheld a district court judge's decision that the NCAA was in fact violating antitrust law by placing limits on the education-related benefits that schools can provide to athletes. The decision allows schools to provide their athletes with unlimited compensation as long as it is some way connected to their education. Brett Kavanaugh became the justice in principle yesterday for his quotes in his opinion. He said the NCAA is not above the law. The NCAA couches its arguments for not paying student athletes in an innocuous label, but the labels cannot disguise the reality. The NCAA's business model would be flatly illegal in almost any other industry in America. There you go, Mark.
Hey, the NCAA lost a case. Surprise. Shocking. Stunning. Not only did they lose the case, Wes, when you figure out from this Alston case, when you figure out there's a $208 million settlement due to damages portion of the case, there's another $33 million in plaintiff attorney fees and cost, and the lawsuit's going to cost the NCAA and its 11 conference co-defendants over $280 million. Now, I don't care who you are, individually or as a corporation, that's a lot of money. And here's the ironic thing about all of it. The NCAA wanted this to go to the Supreme Court. The NCAA forced the issue to get to the Supreme Court. So this was the doings of the NCAA. They forced the hand. It cost them over $280 million, and they lost. Now, that's quite an effort. Seriously, that is a really solid effort. And again, it's led. The organization is led by a guy that got a vote of confidence and a contract extension within the last 2 months. I mean, do we need to talk about the clown show anymore? Seriously. And I don't mean this to be a smart aleck, but this is getting to be the point of absurdity of how ridiculous and incompetent this organization is. And here we go again with name, image, and likeness. And, you know, if, however, enough of if and howevers. Get to work. And now you've got movers and shakers, really smart people who are leaders in college athletics. Guys like Jim Phillips and Greg Sankey and Bob Bowlesby, et cetera, that are now like, okay, now that this has been laid out, now let's get to work and figure something out. Do we get that from Emirate? No, I'm sitting back having coffee. Who's in charge of donuts today? I mean, and we're now talking about a minimalist approach, name, image, likeness. I have a concept, Wes, I want to throw on you. Now, throw one on you. Instead of talking about the NCAA, I think we should talk about CSA. You know what CSA is? Do you have any idea what that is?
No.
It's called Common Sense Approach. It's called CSA. We need to get rid of the NCAA and create the CSA. And that is, let's get people like Phillips and Bowlesby and Sankey, et cetera, the smart people, Jack Swarbrick, the same working group that we just had for the playoff. They need to get
Craig
together.
Craig Thompson, for that matter.
They're part of the working group. Get them in the room and say, let's figure out how do we conduct business. This is a business, all right? Name, image, and likeness is a real thing. So you know what? You're going to have to figure out a rule that benefits the student athlete and the institution, and let's go to work. We don't need state laws. Go figure this thing out on your own. What? How do we conduct business? Now let's create rules and regulation that work to our benefit. Because this NCAA thing does not work. Now, if you want to hire them to conduct a basketball tournament, a baseball tournament, a water polo event, tremendous. I think the NCAA does a great job conducting tournaments. But you cannot have leadership that sits there and goes, we demand this, yada, 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 and they're losing $280 million court cases, can't get anything done, and at the end of the day go, oh, we just hope Congress saves us. That is not leadership. Please,
right,
for the sake of everybody that loves college athletics, Phillips, Sankey, Bowlesby, Swarbrick, let's create the CSA, Common Sense Approach. The rule book doesn't need to be this thick. It needs to be this thick. Go to work. Time for the Heisman pose to the NCAA. Hey, don't call us. We'll call you if we need to figure out a way to conduct a tournament, because you're really good at that. All this other stuff, you are so incompetent that the Three Stooges are back, and there's one stooge. His name is Emmert, and it's a freaking joke what's going on. And I love college sports.
Yeah.
We are going in a landscape of which is unlike anything we've ever seen. But we better get the smart people in the room ASAP, because Mark Emmert and that clown act up in Indianapolis cannot, let me emphasize, cannot get the job done. Period. CSA needs to be created.
It's
CSA.
It's
Common Sense.
There you go.
Approach.
A, right.
It's embarrassing. It's, what's going
it
on.
Is interesting. It is. And it's it also shows you kind of the split that has been created in this process by the organization in Indianapolis and its leadership with the membership. Okay. We always hear about the membership. And also, what falls into this at a time where name, image, and likeness and all these other things are coming to fruition is that the athletic directors, the key core is the athletic directors at the member institutions, who are on the front line every day as it relates to finances and all the things that go into this. Now the ACC is fortunate to have a guy who was on that front line, the Big Ten at Northwestern, but who joins a group, a peer group, if you will, that's as good as we've talked about maybe the ACC's ever had in its history. But here's Jim Phillips' statement yesterday as it related to the conference. And be careful here now. Just the ACC will continue to evaluate the Supreme Court decision that was delivered this morning. The ruling by the justices provides clarity surrounding educationally based benefits. We look forward to engaging our conference membership in our efforts to best serve and support our student athletes, which is what they do anyway. It goes on to say, the court also made it clear that the preferred pathway for resolving these issues is in the legislative process as opposed to the courts. And we look forward to continuing dialogue with the members of Congress to support our nearly 10,000 student athletes. So remember yesterday when we were talking about, you know, Capitol Hill last week and Emmert and former student athletes and how name, image, and likeness drifted into about six or seven other categories? Well, guess what? The Supreme Court essentially now has put the highway together where the membership, the schools themselves, can get a lifeline into D.C. But you know what that means, too. Not everybody agrees, and it never goes the path you want. But it's going to be interesting to see how aggressive the next step is with this, especially as name, image, and likeness comes to light, because that part of this starts next week in some states. Very, very intriguing times. I don't see a path out for the NCAA, but that's me. I see a lot of things that could tumble over the operation in Indianapolis here, Pac, if they're not careful.
CSA, Common Sense Approach. Why in the world? I'm just gonna paint a simple picture here. Why do you think a athletic department at a really small school should have the same rules as what takes place at North Carolina, Ohio State, Alabama? Or Texas A&M, Texas. Pick them. Institutions, athletic departments that are talking about revenues of $150 to $200 million, how do they even relate to a small Division III school? They don't. So therefore, why do you think the rules would make sense for a big guy versus a small guy? It's not knocking the small guy, but this is, you got to get into the real world. And the people that are taking the incredible risk of, hey, here's what we're building. Here's our 100,000-seat football stadium. Here's our 21,000-seat basketball stadium. Here's our 15,000-seat baseball. Those people are operating in a different universe than the guy that says, hey, I can't afford a softball team. I mean, so why do you think the rules make any sense whatsoever for Division III should equal Division I? It doesn't. It doesn't mean that they're wrong. It just means that the big boys should take their ball and create the CSA. They are operating at a different level, whether we're talking about revenue stream, whether we're talking about name, image, and likeness. You pick it. It's just a different universe. It'd be like saying, hey, you know what? Bill Gates' budget this week is a little bit different than Mark Packer's budget this week. Why are we operating by the same financial restrictions? We shouldn't be. I mean, it doesn't even make sense what we're doing with the NCAA. That time has passed, in my opinion. It's gone.
Well, and it's going to give us a lot of material to work with in the next 30 to 60 days because all of this kind of rolls itself into next week. And going to be interesting to see how schools react, how the first images emerge without really any kind of covenants other than those state laws at this point. Sit tight. Two-a-days are next on Packer and Durham. We're going to go to Tigertown. The award-winning Grace Rayner will join us from The Athletic. What is life after Trevor going to be like for Dabo Swinney? And who gets the ball to replace Travis Etienne? Grace Rayner's next two-a-days on Packer and Durham continue on ACC Network.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Packer and Durham on a Tuesday morning, 844-SAY-ACCN. This is our final day of two-a-days, Wes, as we take a kind of a sneak preview into ACC football.
You started down there. You started down the road, this is our final. I thought, oh, no, what have we done? Have we done something wrong?
No, I think we're going to be gainfully employed, at least through kickoff. Now, after kickoff, we'll see where that goes a month from now. This is our last day of looking at the ACC football, kind of a little preview, because we're a month away from kickoff.
Sure.
And today it's all about the Miami Hurricanes and the Clemson Tigers, and Grace Rayner is up and at them. From The Athletic, and she's
look who we got up early.
She hates us for this, but nevertheless, 7:33, she's good to go. Grace, what's happening? What's going on with you? We haven't seen you in a while.
Oh, I know. What's up? Thank y'all so much for having me.
You doing okay? Ready to roll?
Right. I'm ready to roll. Yeah, Tuesday morning.
Okay.
There you go.
All right. Here's the question. We talk a lot about the whole quarterback situation at Clemson. After watching the spring game, Roddy and I have come to the conclusion in some respects the running game is going to be just as interesting because the first play of the spring game was Michael Dukes. Maffa looked good. Will Shipley's in school. Oh, by the way, Lynn J. Dixon's back for like his seventh year. He and Packer had about 5-6 years together on campus.
Four years in and out for me. You can't lump me into that group. I was out on time.
So it just feels like Lynn J. Dixon's been there a long time, Grace. So what's the who gets the ball at the running back spot on the first snap of the first game? How's that against Georgia? I'll start with that fastball.
Okay. First snap of first game, I think I go Dixon. Just knowing what we know about Dabo and veterans and kind of giving them the benefit of the doubt. And he's the most proven guy. He's the most experienced guy. But I think you're right, Wes. I think this competition is wide open. And that was something that I asked running backs coach DJ Spiller about in the spring is kind of what's the pecking order. And at that point, they didn't have one. So I think Kobe Pace is going to be huge for this team. As you said, Dukes looked good. Yeah. Maffa looked good. Shipley, yeah, I mean, they have a bunch of dudes in that room, but if I'm a betting woman on week one, I go Dixon for the first carry.
Grace, I have been almost stunned at how many people have talked about, boy, Clemson's really slipped and this and that, this and that, they don't have the players. Could you make the case that this is Dabo's, and again, forget about wins and titles, who knows, that'll all take care of itself one way or the other. But as far as sheer talent, the roster from A to Z, would you say this is their most talented team?
I certainly think you can make a case for it, for sure. I mean, this is the first time since probably 2018 we've been talking about a defensive line like this one. I mean, you look across that line and you've got, the number one and number three recruit in the country in the same class, and Brian Brzee and Miles Murphy. And then, oh, by the way, Xavier Thomas is back in the mix as well. I mean, Dabo returns 9 of 11 starters on defense. He's got another 5-star quarterback up. I think the offensive line is going to be a work in progress again. But, yeah, I certainly think you can make the case. This is, you know, Clemson's kind of at the point now where they reload instead of rebuild. And certainly they have the talent on this roster.
All right, we're jumping around here. Every time that we start talking about 2021 in the ACC and we get into this quarterback discussion, it invariably leads to wide receivers. And last week, we had this little thing come up about Ja'Cory Roberson at Wake Forest, and I said I thought Zay Flowers was going to lead the league in receiving yards, and I do. And then Packer goes, ah-ha-ha, don't forget, Justin Ross is back. So where are the expectations in your mind today for Justin Ross? What kind of path do you think he's going to be on once camp begins in August?
Yeah, so Justin had his big checkup in Pittsburgh earlier this month. We don't know exactly how it went. We're still kind of waiting to see what the doctor said. But if Justin Ross is cleared to play, which is Clemson's hope, you know, he was a non-contact participant in spring. Clemson's hope is to cut him loose in fall camp and to make him a full contact participant. If Justin Ross plays, obviously it's been a little while since we've seen him, but I think he's the best receiver in the league if he's healthy and is able to sustain the level of success that he had early in his Clemson career.
You know, losing Amari Rodgers, I do think is a big deal because he did so many things for this offense last year. But, you know, I think there's going to be, again, I'm going to just go to crystal ball something. And Grace, this is really more in your neighborhood than mine. I think Clemson's tight end group may be the best it's ever been. And I think this year Clemson's tight end game is going to be a force where we really have not seen that the last couple of years, where they've been so blessed with great skill guys all over the place that they didn't have to go to the tight end. But the collection of guys, size, speed, nastiness, they've got the whole package, and they got a bunch of them in 21.
For sure. I totally agree with you on that, Mark. I mean, you look at this tight ends group, not only do they return Braden Galloway and Davis Allen, who I thought both had really good years last year, but Tony Elliott is now the tight ends coach, Clemson's offensive coordinator. And he has said for years now, this is a position we want to get more involved in the passing game. This is a position we need more out of. And Clemson really hasn't seen that since 2016 when they had Jordan Leggett. So I'm with you. And now they can rotate these guys. They can play a little more 12 personnel if they want to. Tony Elliott has options, not to mention they just signed the number one tight end in the country in the class of 2021 and Jake Brenningstuhl. So he's got some dudes he can really rotate in and out. But, yeah, I'm with you. I really do think this is finally the year that we actually say it and mean it in terms of this tight end group should look really, really solid.
All right. So, Grace, as you start to formulate their playing personality, it does come back to DJ Uiagalelei in this light. He showcased some things against BC and Notre Dame last year. And, look, Trevor was tremendous, right? Number one pick in the draft, everything you could possibly want in a three-year career for any quarterback at any level. But DJ's going to be different. Where do you think the differences spark Clemson the most?
That's good. I mean, there's built differently. First of all, DJ showed up, what, 250 pounds his first spring at Clemson. So I think that's a big difference is just, and Dabo's talked a lot about this, is that mentally, DJ was right there with Trevor and Deshaun, but physically, he is a little bit different. So I am curious to see how does Clemson use him as a runner? What does that look like? And we know that DJ has such a big arm, and we know he loves to air it out. And we know that that's something that Clemson has talked to him about as well. Like, okay, hey, let's take what we have. I know we obviously know that you want to take the deep ball every time, but I think that that's kind of what Clemson is looking for him this offseason is, okay, this offense is now yours. You have full ownership of it. He's a lot like Trevor in that he doesn't seem to get too high or too low mentally. He seems to be very steady. And I think that the transition is going to be really smooth for him, but he's just a different player. And I think that it's going to be natural for us to compare him to Trevor because, like you said, Trevor was the number one pick in the draft. He was the greatest college football player on the planet. But DJ, I think, has different skills, and I think that he'll be just as successful. It's just now his turn to kind of do it his way.
Grace, 2 years ago when Clemson beat Ohio State in the Fiesta Bowl, which was a tremendous football game, For a year on my radio show, I heard every excuse known to man from Ohio State fans. The referees, the dog ate my homework, light to my eyes. I mean, you name it, I heard it. I thought it was somewhat refreshing a year later when Ohio State really punched Clemson right in the face. There were no excuses from the Clemson camp. In fact, it was one of, hey, it was a wake-up call for us to be more physical and get better. Clemson has normally responded pretty well off a big-time loss. It doesn't happen often, but they got outmanned in that game this past year in the Sugar Bowl. How do you think that has equated to not only spring practice, but the attitude and heading into the 21 season?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. When you talk to members of Clemson's defense, especially if you talk to James Skowski, like that guy has not forgotten the Sugar Bowl and has not let his teammates forget it. And I think it's exactly what you said. It's they got outmanned, they got outplayed. It was not close. Ohio State was the much better team. Brent Venables, when you ask him about it, he says, you know, the mentality of Clemson's loss to LSU and Clemson's loss to Ohio State, completely different. Just thought that they were better prepared for LSU, thought that they really had a formula that would work for them. And then Ohio State, everything falls apart really early. So I think it's a fine line between using it as motivation and not harping on it, which is something that Dabo Swinney has been really good at, is figuring out how to toe the line between, I'm going to make sure this motivates you, but we're not going to be stuck in the past. And I think that you're right. I think that this is a Clemson team that historically responds really well. And lucky for Clemson, they have a huge game in week one to get to go out there and prove, okay, hey, this is who we are on the national stage again.
All right, now we've jumped to that. Here we go again, Pack. It all seemingly comes back to Georgia-Clemson on September 4th, doesn't it? I love the way this works in the month of June. Okay, Grace, the game is huge. Dabo's always handled the, you know, front-facing piece of this pretty well, right? I mean, here in the last 5-6 years, Clemson's been about as good looking ahead and dealing with what's in front of them than having people pat them on the back for what they've done. If you had to kind of, you know, look at it today, what's their biggest challenge opening night in your mind?
In my mind, I just want to see how this secondary holds up. You know, we've seen Clemson kind of struggle a little bit with these big arm quarterbacks, Joe Burrow, Justin Fields, JT Daniels is going to be no exception. I'm curious to see what they look like on the back end because they have all of the pieces back, except for Darian Kendrick, which is the other thing I'm extremely curious about, is just how that plays into this, knowing that this is not only a guy that knows your offense, he knows your defense, he knows your whole team, because Darian Kendrick played both ways for Clemson. So I think those are the things that I'm the most curious about. But yeah, just what does Clemson look like on the back end?
Boy, I just, you know, for the sake of college football, thank goodness Clemson and Georgia are playing, right? I mean, for folks like my era, when I was in school there, Clemson, Georgia in the 80s was as good a rivalry as there was in college football. Vince Dooley had great teams, Herschel, all that great stuff, Danny Ford, people. Doing his thing. Those games were so sensational in the 80s. I just love the fact that we're going to see Clemson, Georgia, not only this on September 4th, but a bunch this decade. That's a tribute to both schools who have said, hey, listen, here's what the fans want. Let's go play. We're going to play in Charlotte. We'll play in Atlanta. You come to Athens. We'll go to Death Valley. I just think it's great for college football. Those are games people want to see. And Grace, it's not even crazy to think that Clemson, Georgia, part one in September could be part two later on in the year. They are both that good.
Sure. Absolutely. I agree with everything you said. I think it's good for college football. I think this is a rivalry we need to make more of commonplace. And yeah, you're right. These are two playoff contending teams. So I'm excited we get a look at them early.
Pack, I think in the lead up to the game, Grace probably needs to talk to you about some of the great Clemson, Georgia luminary stories of the past. Maybe you get some Coach Howard stories in there, you know, stuff like that. You could entertain Grace and her fellow colleagues from The Athletic with some of your lore of Clemson, Georgia.
I could do that. But, you know, you think about Vince Dooley and Danny, and, you know, I was there the day Kevin Butler made it from 97 yards. It could have been good from 250 yards in Athens. I was there the day Treadwell returned the favor a couple years later between the hedges. They had such incredible games in the 80s. Yep. And again, for two schools 65 miles apart, two different states, two different leagues, incredible fan bases, great tradition, great history. the bands, the mascots. I mean, you name it. It's got everything you want. It is the perfect description of Southern fried football. That's what that is. Clemson, Georgia.
There you go.
That's what it is.
Do we have to pay you for that? When you
no,
say
you
that,
do, not.
Do you get paid back?
I still own that.
Okay.
And by the way, if somebody out there tries to get cute with me, I will sue you. I really will. I will sue you.
Okay, Grace, that's
done it.
You're done. Back to your sorry to wake you up early, but bless your heart for joining us. Always great to see you. See you. We'll see
great
you in Charlotte,
you.
Right?
Yes.
See you
I
in
will
Charlotte.
See you in Charlotte. Yes. Yes.
All right.
Thank you all so much
Look
for
forward
having
to
me.
It.
Be good.
You bet. Grace Rayner, marvelous job, covers Clemson for The Athletic. Thanks as always for the time. Two days. Manny Navarro joins us from South Florida. We'll do that at 9:15 this morning when we come back. Man, we got a huge 8 o'clock hour. Dan Murphy will be here to talk to us about the Alston decision with the Supreme Court yesterday and the implications going forward. Jeff Gravely. Oh, some of you folks in the Triangle may remember, longstanding television sports personality, now works at NC State for GoPack.com. He's been covering live the Wolfpack in Omaha. He'll be with us at 8:15. So all that to come. 9 o'clock hour, Kelsey Riggs and Manny Navarro. And Wolfpack star Sam Heifel from last night, the former Apex Cougar. On the other side, over and under on this particular. That's right. Hold that A up there and hold it up proudly today, Pack. That's it. When we come back, over or under, the voice of victory administrates that when we continue on Packer and Durham on ACC Network.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Packer and Durham.
Packer and Durham on a Tuesday. Many thanks to Grace Rayner giving you a little Clemson football look in. Coming up top of the hour, Dan Murphy to try to explain in layman's terms what went down yesterday and what it means. That's what we're going to do with Dan. He's always great.
Wasn't good.
No, it was not good for the NCAA.
Good.
No, it was not. Let's go up there to beautiful Bristol, Connecticut, home of the smart people. And it's time for the voice
ladies and gentlemen,
of victory.
There he is. Look at the shirt today, Pack. Full lumberjack regalia.
Yes, sir.
For Joshua Macri of Maine.
Of the Maine Macris, yes. I got sick of you making fun of the spring collection, Wes, so I went back to the OG lumberjack look.
Like it.
Well, you went Madras plaid last week. What'd you expect? Spring collection.
Yeah, exactly.
Voice
That's
of
more
victory.
Like it.
There it is, the voice.
The voice of victory.
The voice of victory.
You guys ready to play a little over
All
under?
Right.
True.
Sure.
Good. Because that's what we're doing. We'll start with baseball, guys. And let's go over under 9.5 strikeouts for Virginia pitchers tonight against Mississippi State. Keep in mind, the Hoos struck out 13 volunteers, and the Bulldogs struck out 12 times against Texas. So this does appear to be a low number, but which way are you going?
Over. Over, over, over.
Yeah, I'll go. Yeah, I'm going over tonight. Yeah, I'm going over. Absolutely.
It is McGarry.
Take the over
the
on that one.
Abbott.
Yep, let's go over.
The key is anybody going to score? That's the key tonight now. Like all these other games, man, you get everybody's got arms, man. You've got to figure it out. And Mississippi State was swinging at a bunch of nothing the other night, and they got two against Texas, and that was enough. And Virginia's grinding. The Hoos are grinding, man. So it's going to be another great baseball game tonight. Can't wait.
Yep.
From baseball to football, of course, all eyes on quarterbacks in the ACC this season. Over under 4.5 of them, which will reach the 3,000-yard plateau this year. As you can see on the screen, only two did it last year, but in the last full season of 2009, it was 4.
Okay, I want to take Djurkovic.
Yes.
Pickett.
Yes.
Uiagalelei.
King.
Howell. King.
I'm going over.
And
I'm going to go over.
One more. Who am I going to take here? You're going to take – hey, I'm going to take the over. Let's take over. Let's go over.
Did you
over
figure
there.
Out who your fifth one was, though?
You can go Hartman. How about Hartman?
Yeah, I'm Sam Hartman would be one. I think Devin Leary's got a chance to go over 3,000. I mean, NC State's got receivers now. They got receivers. This league, I mean, look, we're telling everybody, and I know it's, you know, hyperbole. You know, you're watching the ACC network. We tell you it's going to be the biggest season ever. Offensively, Pack, I mean, we're going to have to go back and look in the book here to see, to find a season that has the potential to be like this one could be from an offensive perspective, right?
Well, and
I mean,
the reason,
quarterbacks returning 13.
Right. That's exactly where I was going to go. I mean, the reason for optimism is you've got guys under center who can pull the trigger. 13 of 14 mm-hmm. have had starting experience. I mean, that is a huge number. And this is a league that's got a really great collection of wide receivers. So there is a reason to feel that that could happen, assuming everybody stays relatively healthy. So I'm going to go over.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's go over 4.5 for sure.
All right. And let's go back to baseball. Logan Michaels, of course, was the hero for UVA on Sunday, hitting his second career home run, his first of the season. Over-under, 1/2 of another home run for Michaels this year.
Who's setting
Omaha.
The line on some of this? Is this Brooks? Is this Brooks
this
back
is,
in town it, setting
this
lines
is me.
Again?
What would you prefer the line to be, Wes?
I'm going to go under.
I'm going under. I'm going under too. I just thought the half was an interesting line. I will go under. The moment for Michaels was huge Sunday. He's going to be a valuable piece to what Virginia does the rest of the way. But I'm looking for Geloff, Tappan, Nick Kent, you know, guys like that, to Ortiz also to step up and play big roles too now.
Yep. And, you know, I got to say one other thing too. It's such a great story, right? Michaels goes yard, his dad's there. I don't want this to be taken the wrong way. I hope that's the only one he hits, because it's like, it just makes that one home run even that more magical. You know, if he ends up hitting 3 or 4, it's like, well, you know, hey, he got hot. But that first one, man, that was like that. He's got the golden ball. Like, that is one of the greatest stories you're ever going to see this year in sports. That his dad, given what he's been through, you know, just knock on wood, he's even alive, much less in the building, and his son goes yard in the College World Series. I mean, what are we talking? It's Hollywood stuff. So we'll see what happens tonight, though, with the Hoos in Mississippi State. But what a great moment Sunday. Unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
All right, guys, last one. We just, of course, finished talking to Grace Rayner, and the topic that was brought up was Justin Ross, who hopes to come back this season. The question is, though, over under 865 receiving yards for Ross this year. That number, of course, is significant because it's what he did in 2019. Mm. That's how I figured out that line was.
Over, and it blows it out of the water, over.
Yep. If he goes, it'll be a big number. It will be a big number. I think we're looking, though, just like we just talked about 33,000 yard passers. I think we're looking at, I think we may be looking at 3 or 4 1,000 yard receivers too, as a possibility. But Justin Ross, that 8 touchdown number from 2019 will be double figures too, by the way, if he's up and rolling.
Yeah, again, we're under the premise that he's playing and he's 100% and good to go. Mm-hmm. I think Grace is right. I think he is the best wide receiver in the league. And keep in mind now, last year Clemson did not have Ross. They thought they were going to, didn't. Didn't have really Ngata. Didn't have Latson. Those were going to be the three go-to guys. They really never had them at all the entire season. So, you know, people got to wake up a little bit about, man, what are they going to do at wideout? Well, if those three guys are back, they are a problem for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care if you're Georgia or Georgia State. They're a problem. You have to deal with them.
Yeah. Another excellent job by the Voice of Victory, Pack.
Voice of Victory.
Sit Josh tight. Macri. Hour two. Packer and Durham. When we continue, Dan Murphy joins Packer and Durham again. 9-0 the shutout yesterday for old Mark Emmert. Didn't give him the heater, Mark. Dan Murphy joins us hour 2 on ACC Network.
This is the Packer and Durham podcast.